Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Lately, I've been having a first world wild rabbit crisis. It began when I read the comments from various interested parties regarding the reported rabbit explosion in trendy communities on the New Jersey shore. Initially, I thought these served as a good example of just how far those living in affluent areas in developed countries had strayed from nature. A sampling of quotes from this collection includes: "The approval of one area's powers that be for a contract with an animal control group to, quote, round up rabbits which are eating the manicured lawns and lovely flowers planted by residents in this wealthy hamlet by the sea," unquote. Here's another comment. This one made when the aforementioned rabbit roundup was suspended by another political entity 1 month later. "Even my own daughter said, 'Dad, there can be too many negative consequences of this bunny relocation. How can I ignore my own daughter and all my young constituents?'" A representative of a wildlife aid organization noted, "They've taken away all the predators, and we've had an explosion of small things, chipmunks, moles, skunks. A raccoon in your yard is not the worst thing in the world, but some people call anyway. They would eat the baby rabbits, which is a sad thing to say, but people just don't want the predators in their yard, so they call to have them taken away." A local resident weighed in saying, "Something's been eating my flowers, and I guess it's the rabbits because I've seen them all over the place. It's exciting, though. My dogs like chasing them." Another resident took a different view. "I see 5 or 6 of them every time I walk my dogs up the street, and 2 or more when I come back around the block. One time I was watching from my house, and I saw someone walking a dog, and it looked like they were going to let it attack the rabbit. And I said, 'Oh no, oh no, don't do that.'" Referring to the bunny's presence, that same person said, "When I see them, I think how precious they are. It's so precious when nature comes into your home environment." Meanwhile, a member of a local rabbit rescue community sees the current rabbit explosion as the result of people buying, quote, "cute little bunnies around Easter." And finally, a researcher who keeps track of animal population trends said about the rabbits, "It was a fairly good breeding season this year." I admit that some of these comments made me smile, but that temptation was much less after the awareness of another first world rabbit-related crisis hit me with all the subtlety of an environmental smack up the side of the head. Aside from one large, obviously unwild white rabbit I encountered hopping down the road early one morning, I've only seen one rabbit here, and that was a wild one shortly after I moved here 30 years ago. But in other parts of New Hampshire, the once prolific New England cottontail has been gradually replaced by the larger eastern cottontail. The latter was imported by ecologically challenged hunters, presumably seeking bigger targets. Alas, between its smaller size and the increased open land associated with habitat destruction, the New England cottontail didn't stand a chance. This ecological blindness resulted in the same kind of distorted thinking that led some similarly challenged hunters to bring raccoons from the south to the mid-Atlantic area. But this time, it wasn't competition or habitat destruction. The interlopers carried what later came to be known as the Atlantic strain of the rabies virus, a strain to which the local raccoon population had no immunity. Moving at a rate of approximately 25 to 50 miles a year, sometimes more if rabies-carrying animals accidentally were scooped up with the garbage and shipped to other areas, the virus made its way into New England and has been marching northward and westward ever since. Because raccoons are often acclimated to human habitations and share the same nocturnal niche as cats, members of other species, including humans, also have experienced the fallout of this thoughtless human act. Despite the seeming gap between the almost whimsical bunny wars in New Jersey, the decimation of the native New England cottontails, and the Atlantic strain of raccoon rabies relentlessly and sometimes deadly and costly march across the country and northward into Canada, all share one cause in common. They all demonstrate how limited the ecological awareness is, even among those who truly believe we love nature. I look out my back window and see an ideal habitat for New England cottontails. There's more than enough impenetrable brush back there to protect all sorts of creatures, but most of it was neatly mowed when I moved here. And it's possible that at least some of it still would be mowed had not an influx of invasive plants made this impossible. While I would like to envision myself as an aging sleeping beauty with bum joints whose castle is being overtaken by foliage that a simple kiss would dispense, the reality reminds me more of Doctor Who's nemesis, the giant crinoid, taking over with nary a Doctor Who in sight. Only my personal crinoid consists of a seething mass of American bamboo, bittersweet, wild grapes, roses, and blackberries, sumac, rampaging black locusts, and Engelmann ivy, all ready to take over the instant I let down my guard, or my mower, weed whacker, or shovel. But who knows? Somewhere in all that mass of encroaching botany, there might be a few New England cottontails who created a place for themselves as the number of fishers, coyotes, foxes, and other predators have increased and the raccoon population slowly rebounds as wildlife vaccination programs continue. Maybe some of those hardy little New England cottontail souls who found protection in that great green mass made their peace with the invasive plants and now call them home. I like to think this could happen.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.